Yeah, no, I think what you're discussing is the ability of Ukraine to reach deep inside of Russia and conduct strikes.
Sure.
I think that's one of the dynamics that's changed in this war over the last few months, and that is that Russians are finding it more difficult to defend their own airspace. And what we hope that means is that it's going to create the space now to negotiate the end of this war.
It's an escalation, but it's also an escalation that can help lead to an end.
We have many ways we can win, but we've already won militarily. They have very little left, and they want to make a deal so badly. They called a little while ago. They want to make a deal so badly. I just don't know if they're worthy of making a deal. I don't know that they're going to honor the deal. That's the problem.
This is my video update on this Thursday afternoon, July the 9th, coming to you from Limassol, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And we are going to start things off today, once again, with the war between the United States and Iran, which is in full swing. We have a full-on conflict between the U.S. and Iran. Actually, Axios is reporting that, according to their sources, this is coming from Axios, that the Trump administration is ready to strike Iran for the next month. 1 month of strikes into Iran. Now, Trump was on Air Force One, and he actually said to reporters that Iran is calling him and they are begging for a deal. He actually said this to reporters. Iran is calling him and they are begging him for a deal. This is after 2-3 days of U.S. strikes into Iran, big strikes, heavy strikes into Iran. Iranian retaliation hitting Gulf countries, targeting U.S. Air bases in those Gulf countries, focusing on Bahrain and Kuwait. But on Trump's statement that some people in Iran are calling him and they are begging for a deal, the stock market went up. Stock futures rose on that statement from Trump. So we are back to this game of Trump saying he's going to hit Iran very hard, and stocks fall, oil rises, and then Trump is making statements that Iranian officials are calling him and there's some sort of a peace deal being worked out. Stocks rise, oil prices fall. We've returned to this game. But the conflict between Iran and the United States is very real. Before Trump boarded Air Force One, and he was still at the NATO summit in Ankara giving a press conference with Rubio and his team behind him as he was speaking to the media, Trump was asked by a reporter 3 weeks ago, "Mr. President, you were calling the leadership of Iran, this new leadership, you were calling them smart people. You were saying they were nice people. They were rational. They were easy to work with. What happened, Mr. President?" And Trump's reply to that question from a reporter was that he got to know them. He got to know them and things changed. That was his answer to the reporter. He said that the U.S. knocked out level one of leadership, then they knocked out level two, and this is level three. And of course, the reporter was referencing how Trump had called the Iranian leadership scum, 3 weeks ago, they were easy to work with and nice people and pragmatic and rational. And yesterday they were scum. And Trump's reply was that, look, I got to talk to them. I got to know them. And I don't like them. We knocked out level one. We knocked out level two, he said. And this is level three. Level one and level two, Trump did not like. They're now on levels. He's now placing the leadership of Iran into levels. So the way this is heading, maybe we return to the MOU, but even if we do return to the MOU, it's still going to collapse. And we're going to get a resumption in the war. So the way this goes is that Iran is going to close the Strait of Hormuz. Actually, I've read reports which claim that the IRGC and Iran is already closing the Strait of Hormuz. And this time around, given the situation of petroleum reserves in the United States and just the overall global gas shortages and energy situation, 4 weeks was what the United States had before they signed the MOU. This time around, Iran might actually take this to its conclusion. No deal, no agreement. We will keep Hormuz closed until you burn through your petroleum reserves or until we get some sort of global energy collapse, which would compel the Trump administration in the United States to hit Iran with everything they have in order to prevent that from happening. So a huge military escalation in order to prevent Iran from keeping Hormuz closed until the United States runs out of oil or until we get a huge collapse. That's where this thing goes. Unless we get back to the MOU or we get to some sort of an agreement, and this time around the agreement works. But I just don't see that happening. I do not see that taking place, getting back to the MOU or working out another agreement. The hardliners in Iran are, if you want to call them the hardliners, the group in Iran that did not believe in the MOU, they now have the momentum because they can say, look, we gave the MOU a try. They can go to Pezeshkian or Arachi, Galibaf. We did it your way. Now let's do it our way and shut down Hormuz and keep it closed. CNN, they said that about 200 million barrels of oil escaped the Strait of Hormuz over the 3 weeks of the MOU, according to Andy Lipow, president of Lipow Oil Associates. That's the equivalent of 2 days of global demand. 200 million barrels got through over the 3 weeks that the MOU was in place. We made it to 3 weeks. That's it. 3 weeks. And that's the equivalent of just two freaking days. And then CNN said that of the 200 million barrels that made it out of the Strait of Hormuz, around 60 million barrels worth was Iranian oil, which the Trump administration sanctioned again on Tuesday, giving buyers just 10 days to take hold of it before it's off limits again. Yeah, the sanctions waiver on Iranian oil that went into effect when the MOU was signed has now snapped back. Sanctions are back in effect on Iranian oil. But of the 200 million, 60 million barrels was Iranian oil, and you got to imagine that oil is on its way to China. And that covers 2 days. 2 days, that's it. So if they shut down Hormuz, we are all screwed. We go right back to where we were 60 days ago. And the Trump administration is going to impose a blockade. That's coming. If this continues, if Axios reporting is correct and the Trump administration decides to strike Iran for 1 month, if Iran closes the Strait of Hormuz, full closure, then what we will eventually get, what we will get immediately is the sea blockade of Iran. And that's going to piss off China and everything resets to when the conflict started. But this time around, the United States has 4 weeks plus 2 days, right, of strategic petroleum reserves, because they're going to be in a panic once again to keep the price of oil down. All the analysts that are reporting on the resumption of the conflict and on the possibility of Iran closing the Strait of Hormuz, they all came to the conclusion that the signing of the MOU benefited the Trump administration in that they got the price of oil to be lower than when the conflict started a couple of months ago. And so that gave the Trump administration some breathing room. But that price can shoot right back up. And so they're going to try to figure out ways, Besant and Trump, to keep that price at a low level, or at least at the $100 level. So that's where we are with the conflict with the United States and Iran. At the NATO meeting, Trump met with Al-Shara al-Jalani. He was not officially invited to the NATO summit, but he was in Turkey, allegedly taking meetings with Turkish officials. So he was just hanging around in Ankara, Al-Shara al-Jalani. Not an official invite, just kind of floating around, hanging around in Ankara. And so Trump decided to meet with him. And Trump announced that sanctions against Syria will be lifted. Big announcement. He's going to go back to the United States and work on removing sanctions against Syria. Rubio said the same thing. What the F is al-Jalani, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, IS, doing at a NATO summit? I guess it kind of makes sense, right? I guess we've arrived at the destination where we actually have one of the leaders of al-Qaeda at a NATO summit. I guess it kind of makes sense when you think about it. But Trump was also humiliating al-Shara al-Jalani, and he just sat there and took it. He was sitting next to Trump, and Trump started to talk about how he's been the most pro-Israeli president, and he was the one that delivered the Golan Heights to Israel. And al-Shara was just kind of sitting there, just listening to Trump. Maybe he was humiliated by what Trump was saying. Maybe not. Probably doesn't care, al-Shara al-Jalani, right? He probably couldn't care less about what Trump was saying about the Golan Heights and stuff like that. So that was an interesting exchange. You had Alensky floating around at the NATO summit. You had al-Shara floating around at the NATO summit. What a circus. What a clown show circus. So should we talk about the comedian? Le Gobelin Vert. Le Gobelin Vert with his shiny new Patriot missile license
David, don't you? We got a license for Patriot missiles. How much can I sell this on eBay?
The president of the United States telling Alensky that he's going to be making Patriots, right? And Trump says, Trump was making fun of Alensky. He was mocking Alensky. He was making fun of him. Trump did not want to be there. He did not want to be at the NATO meeting. He did not want to be meeting with Alensky. It was obvious. And he was completely making fun of Le Goblinver. He said, we'll give him a Patriot license. And now this guy won't be complaining anymore about Patriots. He'll just make them. As if Patriots, you get the recipe for making Patriots. And there you go. A couple of weeks and you're making Patriot missiles. That's all it takes, right? What's Lockheed and Raytheon? It's Lockheed and Raytheon that manufacture the Patriots. I think that's correct. But what are they going to say when Trump goes back to D.C.? And he says, hey, give all the information, the licenses, all the secret sauce. Give it all to the most corrupt country on planet Earth. Give it to Alensky. Give it up to Alensky. He's going to build a factory in Ukraine, and he's going to manufacture Patriot missiles. And that factory is not going to be targeted by Russia. No, they're not going to target that factory. Right? Unbelievable. Trump said, a little birdie told me that you're going to be getting a Patriot missile license. Le Goblinver. Nonsense. Nonsense. It would take Ukraine 20 years to start making Patriot missiles. Making the missiles, building the factory, preventing Russia from not destroying the factory, setting up all the supply chains. 10 years, 20 years. Ukraine's Patriot problem is today. It's immediate. They don't have any air defense, including in the capital city. A world leader in a war would exploit what would be considered a huge weakness in their opponent, not being able to secure their capital, the skies of their capital city, not having any air defense throughout Ukraine, but in the capital. A world leader would exploit that. Now, will Putin take advantage of this huge weakness? I don't know. Yes, I do not know. I cannot answer this question. But Alensky left the NATO summit with a promise from President Trump that he's going to get a license to start manufacturing Patriot missiles. Netherlands, no more Patriots. Bulgaria, no more. Hungary, Magyar, also said, no more Patriots. Can't give you guys any more weapons. Czech Republic said no more money, but I'm positive, no more weapons as well. Slovakia, no more weapons. No more Patriots. I guess Alensky is thinking that with this license, there must be a way to spin it into some sort of business or something, right? Some way to make money. Can I take this license and resell it? Can I take this license and then go to Germany and tell Germany, let's sign a $100 billion Patriot defense deal? You know that's what Alensky is thinking. That's probably what Trump is thinking as well, right? Let's pretend that we're going to give a license to Ukraine, and then let's get the Europeans to sign Patriot contracts with Ukraine, and we'll make money. That's a very good idea, Mr. Trump. We be partners, 50-50. And I was thinking 99-1, 1%, Podolyak. Who is this guy? 1%. I don't do 1%. Yeah, it's a grift, man. The whole thing's a grift. No way is this going to happen. No freaking way. And Trump knows it. Even at the end of his statement, on the Patriots. he says that he hasn't told the defense contractors, defense companies about the Patriot license. But when I go back to the U.S., I'll tell them, okay, yeah, that's how all of this stuff works. Trump did tell Le Goblin Vert that we have developed a very good relationship. He also said we have a little stake in that country, you know, because we have some land in that country where we have minerals. I look forward to taking advantage of it at the right time. The minerals contract, he remembered the freaking minerals contract. Unbelievable. Yeah, Trump is ready to take advantage of all those minerals when the time is right. Was that even a contract, or was that also an MOU or some sort of an agreement? I remember that whole contract, the negotiations. I don't think it was a done deal. It was a very flaky, very flimsy agreement on the minerals. Anyway, that was Trump and Le Goblin Vert. He also told Zelensky to go to Moscow, right, to deal with Putin, and they can talk about things, and he can go to Moscow and they can talk about things. And Zelensky's response to Trump is, hey, I go, but he said many drones over in Moscow. So Trump was mocking Zelensky, and then Zelensky was mocking Russia and Putin, and that was that exchange.
And I said, I don't think, you know, I have to put myself in this position. I don't know that he'd go to Moscow. Maybe he would. Would you go to Moscow?
It's difficult. There are a lot of Ukrainian drones there. That's right. It's dangerous. It's dangerous.
It's hard to go to Ukraine.
But the most interesting comment with regards to Le Goblin Vert and Ukraine and Russia came from Rubio. Rubio and Trump, because Trump confirmed what Rubio said. So the Secretary of State, he said that the United States will help Ukraine with long-range missile strikes into Russia. And the logic being employed by Rubio is that the long-range missile strikes with the U.S.'s help, and Trump was agreeing to all of this. Trump said, yeah, that's a good idea. That'll work. The logic is that the long-range missile strikes deep into Russia with the U.S.'s help will force Russia to the negotiating table, will force Russia to make a deal. That is the plan. That is the brilliant master plan from the Secretary of State, from the Trump administration. They're already doing it. It's the United States. It's Starlink. It's all the targeting, all the data. It's all the United States that is behind all of the strikes into Russia. We already know that. But it was interesting to hear Rubio actually say that the plan, and they thought this was a good plan. They actually think this is a brilliant strategy. Hit Russia with long-range strikes. We will be behind those strikes, and those long-range strikes into Russia will force Putin to the negotiating table. That's the strategy. You heard it straight from Rubio. A reporter asked Trump about creating a no-fly zone as well. Trump kind of avoided that question. I don't know. Did he answer that question? He told the reporter, what did you say? Or, huh? What did you say? And the reporter's like, closing the skies over Ukraine. And then Trump was... He didn't quite answer that question. Not yes, not no. But what else did Trump say? Oh, Trump also said that with the Patriot contract, the license, he said that Ukraine will do a good job with the Patriots because they're manufacturing drones in basements. He said that as well, that Ukraine is incredible because they're manufacturing tons of drones in basements. That's what Trump said. So Putin, he met with his cabinet yesterday, and they discussed the energy situation, the energy shortages. And you know, Putin's response with the situation with gas and and the collective West hitting the refineries, the difficult situation in Crimea, which is a very difficult situation, Putin said that everything will be worked out. He's like, it's temporary. This crisis is temporary. It's about disrupting the summer holidays, he said. And he also said that the enemy wants to damage the Russian economy, and they want to create, and I quote, a nervous atmosphere in society. We understand that. This is an impossible task, he said. The safety margin of the Russian energy system is very high, one of the highest in the world. No sense of panic. A sense of urgency? Maybe, maybe not, going off of his statement. Hard to tell if there was any sense of urgency. We really got to sort this out with the gas supplies, the gas shortages. We really got to do something about the drones that continue to hit Russia. No real statements along those lines. Very, very weird. But anyway, that was Putin's statement. He doesn't seem too bothered or too concerned about it, about the fact that the collective West is sending drones and missiles into Russia, and that Rubio is talking about long-range strikes, helping Ukraine with long-range strikes deep into Moscow. He didn't seem too concerned about that. Peskov, in the interview from 2 days ago with the Swiss publication, Peskov said that the United States and Russia, you know, they have dialogue. They need to talk to each other. They need to be responsible as the two big military superpowers. And Peskov said that the Europeans are one thing, but Russia and the United States, you know, we have dialogue, he said. And we can talk to each other now. And so we got to try to avoid any escalation. That was Peskov's statement to the Swiss magazine yesterday with regards to diplomacy in the United States. And a couple of hours later, after Peskov's interview was published, talking about dialogue with the United States, and how they're talking to each other. He also said that the United States understands Russia's interests. What a strange thing for Peskov to say. A few hours later in Ankara, you have Rubio saying, yeah, we're going to send long-range drones and missiles into Russia to hurt Russia really bad and to force them to the negotiating table. When they say to force Putin to the negotiating table, what the United States means is that they are going to try to force Russia to surrender, to capitulate. Putin is running the weirdest, strangest war in all of history. It really is a strange strategy that he has employed in this conflict. Very, very strange. Maybe one day we'll get some insight or an explanation of this strategy that he has employed. But we do have trouble in Ukraine, in the west of Ukraine, Bandera land, in Lviv. And it looks like Le Goblin Vert is indeed running out of men, because he is now sending his thugs to the west, to Lviv, an area where they have avoided when it comes to pulling men off of the streets and sending them to the front lines, throwing them in vans, and then sending them to the front. They've tried to avoid Lviv because of its situation, its status as let's say the heart of Bandera land. They're now they're now there, and they're now trying to force men into the trucks and to send them to the front. And you had huge protests in Lviv. They got very, very upset with Zelensky's thugs. What are they called? Press gangs? Is that what they're called? I've never understood that term. Maybe you guys can tell me in the comments down below what is meant by press gang. But yeah, big protests from the people in Lviv. They're coming here to take our boys, our men, and send us to the front. No way, they said, because Zelensky has been focusing on other areas. He's been deliberately avoiding Lviv, and he's been avoiding, for the most part, avoiding Kiev, because the capital city is always going to be last, right? In any war, the capital city is always the most protected, and they try to have the capital to be the most normal, untouched, unaffected by the conflict. But anyway, that happened yesterday. And the EU Parliament, they actually sided with Poland over the whole NAZI fight between Le Goblin Weer and Nawrocki. Yep, the EU Parliament trying to pass that chat control. They condemned Zelensky, and they sided with Poland. The European Parliament on Wednesday approved an amendment to its resolution on Ukraine's EU accession bid that criticizes Zelensky's decision as an unnecessary and unprovoked escalation that shows disregard for Polish sensitivities and grief linked to the UPA's estimated tens of thousands of victims, saying the move undermines neighborly relations and is not in line with European values. They said it's not in line, the whole naming a military unit in Ukraine after the NAZIs, after the UPA, heroes of the UPA, I believe he named that military unit. It is not in line with EU values. That was the amendment, the resolution from the EU Parliament, which could affect Ukraine's bid to enter the European Union. Basically, the EU Parliament is telling Zelensky, tone it down on the whole NAZI thing. Kind of affects our whole EU values shtick, right? You know, we have this whole EU values thing, and when you go around naming military units after NAZIs and burying NAZI heroes, giving them a hero's burial and all this stuff, kind of messes up our whole EU values thing. So just tone it down, Green Goblin, tone it down. Okay. Be a little more sensitive, they said. Be more sensitive. The foreign minister of Ukraine, Mr. Shiba Inu, he is suggesting a roundtable discussion with Poland. They can sit at a roundtable and discuss the history. What is there to discuss? You guys genocided Polish people? That's what you're going to have a roundtable for? Kind of nonsense from Shiba Inu. Anyway, all right. Let's do some clown worlds, and we can wrap up this video. So the NATO CEO, Rutte, during the Ankara summit, he was asked by a reporter, about self-respect. The reporter asked Rutte, "Bro, where's your self-respect? Where's your dignity, man? Trump comes here and he talks about taking Greenland. He's bashing Spain. By the way, the Trump administration might place an embargo on Spain because they don't like Spain's behavior with regards to NATO and Iran and all of that stuff. So they're actually talking about some sort of an embargo, trade embargo, okay? Whatever, but the reporter asked Rutte, "Where's your self-respect, man? Where's your dignity? you're sitting next to Trump as he's saying all this stuff about the EU, about Europe, about Greenland, Denmark, Spain. Rutte's response to that report, I'll play you the video, but basically Rutte's response to the reporter was a no response. He didn't answer the question. He just started to talk about Russia and about China and about NATO unity and stuff like that. A whole bunch of Rutte gobbledygook. He didn't want to say anything bad about Trump. You see, on this, Rutte and Putin have something in common. They both avoid saying anything about Trump, anything bad, criticizing Trump. Both of them, they avoid it. For different reasons, different purposes, but, you know, there's some commonality there, I guess. But anyway, I'll play you guys the video so you can see the NATO CEO squirm.
Rasmus Reneborg from the Danish news agency.
Yes, hi.
Danish news agency, Ritzau. Mark, you sit next to Donald Trump in moments where he talks about conquering Greenland, talks about lashing out at allies like Spain, starting trade wars. Things that it doesn't seem like the old Mark Rutte would approve of. Does this have any effect on your self-respect when you sit next to him like that and say nothing?
You know, what I always do is acknowledge when praise is due, and I think we should praise Donald Trump for the fact that NATO is so much stronger. Of course, it has to do with the Russian threat, it has to do with the war in Ukraine, but it very much also has to do with President Trump delivering now what, since Eisenhower, the United States tried to achieve, equalizing spending between the U.S. and Europe. And it makes Europe stronger. It makes Europe more relevant for the United States as a partner. So that is the transformative character of this summit, of what happened in The Hague, the implementation since The Hague, this summit as a point in time where we take stock. And I think that is extremely important. And when it comes to Greenland, I already explained. We had a meeting in Davos. And I said, I agree with you when it comes to Russia, when it comes to China gaining access to the High North. But let's do this together. We have NATO for this. Let's work together on this. This is exactly what we are doing.
That is clown world number one. Clown world number two is Macron going for a jog in Ankara. Seems to be Macron's thing now. Wherever he goes, he goes. Wherever he travels, he goes for a jog. But this time around, he's with the sunglasses. He was with the sunglasses throughout Ankara. Whatever happened to Macron's eye, this eye infection that he has, right? Eye infection, whatever it is, it's pretty serious, man. It's a bad eye infection that Macron has. He's been wearing those sunglasses for like a week now. Anyway, he went for a jog wearing the shades. Top Gun, Macron, highway to the danger zone, Emmanuel Macron. And then we have clown world number three, courtesy of the UK. And during the Newsnight show, they had a panel of, I think, Politico analysts or journalists or whatever, pundits. And they were on Newsnight interviewing, let me get this right, Count Binface. Count Binface scrutinizing his credentials on whether he wins a by-election against Nigel Farage and therefore becoming an MP. Right, the whole Farage by-elections. And who is interviewed? Count Binface. Unbelievable. I kind of like it, actually. It's kind of funny, kind of interesting, but wow. Wow, British politics. There it is. Anyway, that's the video, everybody. I will end it there. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X and Rumble, Telegram, Substack as well. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch like what I'm wearing in this video update. And thank you to everyone that is smashing the like button. A big thank you to everyone that's subscribed to this channel. please check your subscription, because YouTube is removing subscribers. And to all of those who are obliterating the hype button, feels good to obliterate the hype. Thank you so much for demolishing that hype button. You know what this is? It's like aloe vera. Yeah, you can like snap off a part of this this plant and it heals you. Amazing Cyprus, amazing Limassol, huh? Anyway, that's the video, everybody. I will see you guys tomorrow.